Welcome everyone to the ESG podcast, Addressing Archiving Challenges. I'm Heidi Bigger, an analyst with the Enterprise Strategy Group. In this podcast, Brian Babineau, ESG Senior Analyst, and I will take a look at the various challenges growing volumes of unstructured data, regulatory compliance requirements, and e-discovery demands are creating for organizations, and specifically how implementing an intelligent archive tier, such as IBM's System Storage DR550, can be implemented as a long-term scalable solution. While this podcast pays particular attention to financial and government industries, other verticals will find the content to be both informative and applicable to their environments. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Heidi. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, at ESG, we spend a lot of time researching various external impacts on information technology environments. And the three that you brought up in the introduction, information growth, regulatory compliance, and electronic discovery, have certainly impacted and made it difficult for various IT managers as well as senior management to find a way to balance how to keep information and how to store it with the regulatory requirements and the ability to produce it for electronic discovery. And as we go through the podcast today, it is our intent to make sure that people understand what those requirements are, how discovery impacts it, and what challenges they may have as they make IT purchasing decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Exponential data growth and a seemingly unending list of corporate governance and regulatory requirements are, among other things, are dictating longer data retention periods. And all of this is making organizations have to rethink their strategies for long-term data archival, particularly organizations generating large volumes of fixed digital content, also known as unstructured data. And you're right, organizations that don't think along these lines, that don't think about future archive requirements, are exposing themselves to potentially significant and unnecessary regulatory, corporate governance, and electronic discovery risks. Archiving is not a new concept for IT, but it's one we're definitely hearing more and more about, and not just from a technology standpoint. So, Brian, why is archiving becoming a more frequently discussed business process?
Heidi, there are several reasons. The first, regulatory compliance, where organizations have to save information because they're mandated. The second is the increase in electronic discovery. And the electronic discovery is really the process of producing electronically stored information as a result of a federal procedure, a civil procedure, or a regulatory inquiry. And most recently, in December of 2006, there were changes to the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which govern how civil law processes go, so how evidence is admitted, what the trial process looks like, how a jury is obtained, and some of the penalties regarding civil cases. Those changes to the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, or as more commonly referred to, FRCP, really focused on producing and exchanging electronic evidence. And as such, organizations have to find ways to keep it, and archiving is the process to do that. And the last reason, in conjunction with the compliance and the discovery aspect, is just the ability to improve storage management and IT resource management. According to our research, Enterprise Strategy Group predicts that the worldwide digital archive market in capacity will exceed 27 exabytes in 2010. That's only a few years away, but because of these three things, discovery, storage impacts, as well as the regulatory requirements, we're going to save more information than we ever have before. To put it in perspective, we are going to triple today's archive capacity and be at more 10 times more than where we were in 2005. So archiving, there's just so many reasons, and the capacity is just going to get out of control.
Yeah, definitely. We're talking a lot of data that ultimately will need to be managed, stored, and protected. Since regulatory and e-discovery requirements are driving a lot of this growth, let's take a closer look at them, and let's start with regulatory requirements. Brian, can you talk specifically about the type of challenges organizations are facing today from a regulatory standpoint?
Sure. There are several regulations. I think we counted over 10,000 that organizations must face. Some apply into industry, some apply to more horizontal. So an industry-specific regulation would be HIPAA in the healthcare, or the SEC's record retention regulations for financial services broker-dealers. The more horizontal regulations would be something like Sarbanes-Oxley that apply to publicly traded companies who have to retain audit records for 5 to 7 years or something like that. So, you know, some of the key compliance challenges, regardless of what industry regulation or what publicly traded company regulation exists, are they all specify in some form or fashion that information must be retained for certain periods of time. So if there's a record retention portion to a regulation, it usually encompasses how long a specific record must be retained. And in reality, that creates a challenge of storing large information for long periods of time. It creates a challenge of centralizing business records for the ability to consistently manage retention periods. We must figure out how to preserve the records and secure the records. So some of this information contains, you know, bank account information, credit card data, and we must be able to preserve it so it's not changed. And then the other thing is we must be able to secure it so that nobody has access to it. You know, if we're saving data for longer periods of time, there is a risk that that's a treasure chest for hackers or somebody else to get at it. We must find ways to secure it. And then the ability to protect corporate archives, right? We're now saving these key business records. We can't just have one copy of them. We want to make sure we protect them.
So we've talked a little bit, or we've mentioned longer retention periods. What type of retention periods are we talking about, and does it vary by industry? Earlier on, we said we were going to talk specifically about financial services and the government industries. Maybe you could talk about retention periods for those two industries.
Heidi, that's a great question about retention periods. In financial services specifically, we see more common retention periods roughly between 3 and 7 years. And the SEC, the most common rules there are 17A-3 and 4 of the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934. And 17A-3 specifies what records need to be created by broker-dealers, and 17A-4 determines retention periods as well as how they're supposed to be stored. But there's also some other quirky financial services regulations. So, for example, in the United Kingdom, their financial services agency isn't prescriptive, but they actually talk about retaining records for 3 to 5 years. Some of them are longer in the 7 and 9 retention period length. Back in the United States, we have the Investment Company Act. We also have certain record retention regulations that apply to mortgages. And because mortgages are traditionally 30 years, we have to keep those records for, you know, the life of the mortgage. And as we're going through now in this current economic climate, I would expect that we're going to see retention periods increase. And in fact, if you look at our research over time, we've started to see the average retention period across all industries creep from 3 years closer to 5 and 7 years right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I would think also when the longer you keep these records, then that obviously has an impact or has implications for how you preserve it and how you secure those records over that period.
Absolutely. It also has an impact of how you're going to store the information, because if you're saving things for longer periods of time, you got to figure out how to store them economically.
And so you talked a little bit about some of the financial industry implications. What about government agencies?
Yeah, certainly. You know, there's a wide disparity of government record retention rules. So here in the United States, we have federal government rules, we have state, and then we also have local rules of what we have to keep. You know, the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, it was really put into place as a federal agency to help other federal agencies retain certain records. And those retention periods vary. If you look at defense contracts, you look at Office of the President, we may be keeping things for upwards of 50 years in those cases. When you go to local governments here in the United States, we have what's called sunshine laws that requires certain government business to be publicly available. These are the same laws that make our birth certificates, our marriage licenses available to anybody that requests them. So we're talking about keeping certain types of business records for very extended periods of time when you're dealing with the government. And Heidi, we didn't talk about this at the beginning, but a lot of the records I just brought up, like birth certificates and things like that, aren't necessarily created electronically. But now with email, and, you know, school committees are having meetings and they're sending the meeting notes out via email. Well, those are now digital records that apply to sunshine laws within the states. And I know you live in Atlanta, Heidi, but some of the Georgia rules have us keeping specific contracts as well as some of the meetings that the government officials have, you know, for the life of the state. So there's no disposition there. So we're looking at keeping things at the government level for long, long periods of time.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked a little bit about some regulatory requirements. Let's switch gears a little bit and let's talk about the implications from e-discovery. I mean, obviously, this is a big issue. So maybe you could talk us and walk us through that a little bit with giving a few examples from the financial and government sectors.
Sure. You know, electronic discovery, the process of producing records if they're requested as part of a civil or regulatory inquiry, it's a very big issue. I'll talk about its impact on specific industries, but let me start with some general comments. The biggest challenge that organizations face is the ability to locate information. So once we stored records because we have to, you know, we talked about these record retentionations, very rarely did anybody have to go produce them as far as we kept them, but we never had access to them. Electronic discovery changes that paradigm. So once potential evidence sources, like including backup tapes, files that are found on a PC, this data, if it is requested as part of an electronic discovery, must be preserved as long as the matter or the audit is ongoing. And we all know how some of the legal systems are and how slow they are. So once we request evidence and it's deemed responsive, the legal term is, we have to preserve it for a specified period of time. So the preservation of evidence helps ensure its integrity, and many organizations finding it difficult to store a large amount of data and then prevent that data from being manipulated, modified, or deleted for several years. If we talk about how long these cases last, you know, most data that's requested is kept for 36 months or even longer.
Yeah, so again, what we're talking about here is, and we said at the beginning, is we're talking about large volumes of data that have to be managed and preserved and protected for a long period of time. And obviously, that's creating big challenges for organizations, as you mentioned, because a lot of people still have a lot of this information on paper. But beyond that, a lot of this information is also not necessarily kept on disk archives. Sometimes it's on primary storage, and sometimes a lot of it's still on tape. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The electronic discovery request can involve anything from email to customer invoices, database records. You know, in fact, some organizations are keeping video images now as part in an audio file. So even, you know, we're creating this podcast. We're creating essentially a business record here that may be subject to electronic discovery. How it impacts archiving is we now have to create corporate archives that take into account accessibility and availability, because at some point in time, our evidence may need to be accessed. Our business records may need to be accessed. So we have to figure out how to get organizations to balance accessibility and availability with the cost of store. What electronic discovery does is being able to locate data quickly as in response to an inquiry or a regulatory requirement. Organizations can't spend a lot of time looking for data. There's fines, there's man hours, there's lost revenue if we're constantly trying to make and go back to backup tapes or other types of formats because we're looking for historical data in response to a discovery request. The ability to have a centralized archive that's online and accessible for the most recently requested or most highly litigious or risky records is probably something that organizations are going to have to evaluate in the near term.
All right, Brian. So I think this would be a good place to introduce or reintroduce the topic of intelligent archiving, or establishing or creating that intelligent archive tier. So maybe you could take a couple of minutes and just define how we define what an intelligent archive is.
Sure, no, not a problem. An intelligent archive is essentially a central place where organizations can store information, set retention policies, and then manage the information according to those policies. So, you know, the ability to actually put a 3-year retention policy and then store that information efficiently, and not all records for that 3 years may want to be stored on disk. The ability to move it across a storage infrastructure to align that particular record or that particular piece of evidence with the most appropriate storage system. So some may, you know, if we don't think it's going to have to be accessed, we may want to keep it on tape. Or if we only have to access it for a short period of time, tape may work. But for those that are more risky, we want to store it on more accessible media. So the concept of an intelligent archive is the ability to manage information according to the policies dictated by regulatory mandates, discovery requirements, or just by aligning it with the most appropriate storage system is really what we believe organizations should be moving towards.
Great. And then from a technology standpoint, then, we're talking this archive tier could be made up out of disk and tape, even optical?
Absolutely. I think organizations can choose a permutation of all of those media types. The funny thing is that everybody believes that you have to have disk in the archive tier, and we agree with that, but that doesn't mean you can't have the other two. I think a combination thereof, because remember, we're talking about keeping some data for 3 years and others for 50 or plus years. The HIPAA requirement has people storing information for the life of a patient. So keeping all of the information on disk probably isn't feasible or cost effective over time.
So I know in a little bit we're going to talk about some of the practical steps that users can take, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on My feeling is there's a lot of people out there that are using tape as their archive. Can you just walk us through the differences between a tape backup and an archive and the advantages and disadvantages to continue to leverage tape for all your archiving needs?
Sure, Heidi. I think the first point there is that backup and archiving are different processes. Right now, many organizations make this mistake of just saving backups for long periods of time and calling them the quote-unquote corporate archive. You need to have the ability to retrieve data quickly. You need to have the ability to manage data according to policy. And backups change the format of files, right? They compress it and they move everything. And really, those compressed files are supposed to be used for recovery purposes. Archives should be used to keep data accessible and to make sure we can search through and find what we're looking for. You know, there are some things to consider there. Tape isn't always the most accessible media, but it can be a long-term storage mechanism to store archives on. So I think organizations first need to get the understanding that backup and archiving are distinct processes, and archives should be the ability to move information that's not changing or information that's subject to regulatory or discovery requirements and move it off of a primary system into a secondary. And once we have that, you know, you can run your backups of the primary. The other key intersection point, Heidi, is that once you create a corporate archive, you always have to back it up. So keep in mind, though, I always tell clients that backup and archive are different, but they intersect. You want to archive data before you backup, and then you want to make sure you protect your archives by backing them up on a as frequent basis as necessary.
So I think you made some really good points. And I think so there's the issue with a lot of people using their existing tape backups for their archives. And then on the flip side, we're seeing a lot of people that are keeping archive data on these huge volumes of content that you talked about earlier on their primary storage systems. Can you just walk us through what the benefits are of getting that unstructured data, those huge volumes of unstructured data off our primary storage systems and onto appropriate archives, whether they be disk and tape, or a mix?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the first benefit is if you're storing it on a lower cost media, whether it's disk or tape, taking it out of the primary environment has an immediate capital expenditure cost impact. And if you are consuming less of that primary capacity, you're actually saving money. Now, keep in mind, we're saving this information because we have to or because there's some business benefit for doing it. So we might as find ways to store it at the lowest cost. And that's the first benefit. The second is if we move it out of that primary environment, and when we back up that primary environment, those backups should go much quicker. If we want to replicate that primary environment, those replications won't take as long because, remember, we've moved out stagnant or unchanging data. We've also moved out pertinent records that must be kept according to certain policies. So those are the two inherent benefits that I see. And, of course, operationally, it's much easier to manage a smaller primary environment. And then the archive can either be managed by a separate group or is pretty self-contained because, remember, that data is not changing and we just need to make sure that inappropriate access isn't given.
All right, Brian. Yeah, you mentioned some very important benefits of implementing an archive tier. One thing that you didn't comment on, though, that you might want to expand on a little bit about is the power and cooling benefits.
Yeah, certainly. There's a lot of talk out in the marketplace today about the green IT initiatives that some organizations have. And one thing to keep in mind is that you have to measure the power consumption and the cooling requirements of all of the storage infrastructure elements. So if we decide to build the multi-tier archive, disk, optical, and tape, one thing to consider is, before moving the data across all of those, is which one of those devices consume the most power, the floor space requirements, and how they're cooled. Because there are inherent benefits of moving data to the most appropriate storage system based on cost, but also, are you running that on the most appropriate, most energy efficient storage system? So that's always one consideration that organizations should have. And it's become more important because data center power restrictions are in place, as well as data center real estate is very scarce these days. So making sure that when you bring in an archive tier, you balance power with information accessibility and requirements and the cost to store that information.
All right, Brian, so we've talked a lot about the benefits and the need for implementing an archive tier. Now I think it'd be a good opportunity to talk about one option should users feel that they need to go this route, and that would be the IBM Storage Systems DR550.
Yes, Heidi, we've actually followed the DR550 since IBM introduced it, and they've recently come out with a couple of new options and capability enhancements. And the one thing that I've always found interesting about the DR550 is that it does support disk, tape, and optical. So it's multi-tiered within the same product family.
Yeah, that's great. There are two different models of the product. We'll talk a little bit about those in a few minutes. But can you talk to me? I think one of the things that we talked about earlier was how do you secure your archive? Can you talk to me a little bit about the tape features? Because I think that'll be something that listeners will be very interested in.
Absolutely. So one of the things that customers may choose to do with the DR550 is move data to tape. And if you move it to tape, there is a chance that you may moving it off-site for disaster recovery purposes, or just the fact that you have the tape inside your environment and you may want to secure it. So both models support tape, and that tape has various levels of encryption. And whether it's the LTO encryption or WORM capabilities, the write once, read many capabilities, this can help secure and preserve information from being changed or altered. So for organizations that are storing sensitive business records or essentially trying to prevent those business records from being modified or deleted, the tape feature functionality with encryption or WORM is great options for that.
Yeah, in addition to that, too, the other benefit of being able to mix in tape and disk in your environment is that it allows you to kind of, you know, adjust your archiving or the scale of your archive to your actual cost, too. So I would think that there would be benefits there from a cost perspective, allowing you to use or leverage tape as you need.
Yeah, it's a great capability.
All right, so this is good. So the DR550, it allows you to build that multi-tier archive to meet your particular requirements. But my question is, and I'm guessing this is a question that listeners have too, is how do you move the data among these tiers? Is it an easy process? What's involved? And how is it handled on the DR550?
Sure. If organizations want to take advantage of all the media types that the DR550 supports, they can easily use the System Storage Archive Manager. The acronym there is SSAM, S-S-A-M. And within SSAM, it runs on an integrated server that's part of the DR550 product. Users can actually set policies to move data between each of the physical media types or the storage media types, so that, and this is really a derivative of the Tivoli product that IBM has, and it allows customers to move information based on policies across the different tiers, and it's all an automated, can be scheduled. And it makes life much easier for anybody that needs to take advantage of, wants to put things on disk and tape and maybe even optical, so they can get some scale by adding more capacity to each of the storage types, and then they can move data across all of them pretty easily with the SAM capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, right. I think that the way that IBM refers to it is that it talks about it as being so-called the brains of the system that allows that movement of data. The question is, okay, it moves, allows you to move the data once it's on the archive platform, but what about integration with other archiving applications? How is that handled, and is it possible?
Right. The most important thing, you can build the archive, but if you can't get the data in, there's a problem there. So the great thing about the DR550 and the SSAM is that it actually has an API that directly communicates with the SSAM, and that API has been integrated with over 40 archiving applications, including IBM's own Content Manager and FileNet content management solution. And so IBM customers that are running those software can easily leverage the DR550 scalability and security capabilities, as well as the WORM capabilities. But if you're using other archive applications, whether it be email archiving, database archiving, or maybe some HSM tools, hierarchical storage management solutions, all of those can easily communicate with the DR550 through the SAM API. And if customers don't have an application, but they just want to connect via an NFS or SIFS and move files that way, they can do that natively with the gateway feature that the DR550 applies. So there's no shortage of ways for people to get information into the archive. And then once it's in the archive, they can easily set policies to move it across the different media types. And this allows for some scalability. You can get the appropriate performance because you can use disk or tape. And you're protected because there's security features in there. So there's plenty of ways to get stuff in. There's plenty of ways to move it around and secure it.
That's great. So you mentioned scalability again. So I think it would be a good time to talk about how you can mix and match technologies to meet your requirements. What about being able to build or implement a solution that actually is appropriately sized for your environment?
Heidi, that's a great question. There's different size customers. We were talking about financial services and government, but you know, in healthcare organizations, you have small hospitals, large healthcare systems, you have doctor's offices. So the cool thing about the DR550, and one of the most interesting things, is how they've offered two products and two models. The DR1 is a single server, single rack, and is a 25U system that provides up to 30 terabytes of usable disk capacity. And then it can be scaled with tape or optical. So if you need to add more capacity, you can continue to scale that. For large organizations, the DR2 model is great for big Wall Street shops. It can scale from 8 to 136.5 terabytes of usable disk capacity. And if an organization wants high availability with the DR2 model, those management servers can essentially be clustered so that there's no risk of downtime.
All right, so you talk about disaster recovery. Earlier on, you mentioned one of the things that ultimately you obviously have to do is protect your archive. So is it easy for users to back up the DR550?
Absolutely. There's an integration point with Tivoli Storage Manager to make it easy to copy. And then the enterprise, the DR2 version of the DR550, supports both synchronous and asynchronous replication. So if an organization wants to replicate their archive for disaster recovery purposes, they can do so just by selecting the enterprise model, the DR2 model from IBM.
All right, great. We've covered a lot of topics here. And I think before we conclude today's podcast, I think it would be a good idea to go back and just take a few minutes to remap the DR550 specific features to user challenges. And we'll do them one at a time. So let's just start with storing large volumes of data for long periods of time cost effectively. How does the IBM DR50, again, just remind people how that maps to that specific challenge?
Heidi, that's a great point. You know, as organizations look to meet these retention requirements, legal preservation, or if they're just moving information from a primary environment to a secondary environment, they're going to have to find storage systems that can scale. And the IBM's DR550, it has a baseline of usable disk capacity in both its models. But then the key thing is that as customers grow and they save more information, they can continue to add tape capacity or optical capacity, and it's all managed as one system, as one entity. So it's a central archive that has that scale. Availability. And then the ability to store information across all those, there's different price points for optical, different price points for tape, and different price points for disk. And there's always different access requirements. So you can align access requirements, manage them with the appropriate cost, and put them on the right storage media. So I think scalability and cost management are the two key things that the DR550 has to help people store information for longer periods of time.
All right, but what about, again, for centralizing business records for consistent retention management?
You know, the ability through the SAM capabilities, first is they can archive any type of content. As we talked about, electronic discovery is about emails, database records, and other things. Business records are being born digital now. So the ability for it to support multiple archive applications and get everything into an archive is the first benefit. You have a central point where you can look for evidence, you can manage your records. And then the other thing is that with the SAM's retention policies, you can move the records or the evidence or just the information across the different tiers. So now you're handling all of those policies and handling that data movement within one central system. So not only can we put it all in one place, but we can manage it all in one place. And you don't have to worry about disparate archives, learning new technologies, worrying about operational overhead that comes with trying to manage separate archives. And from an attorney's perspective, if you're looking for evidence inside these archives, you can go to one system as opposed to multiple. So there are plenty of inherent benefits of putting all of your information inside of a DR550 centralized archive.
Right. And then again, just to, I know we talked a lot about this during this podcast, but just to recap again, record preservation and security, really important today. Let's just go over how the DR550 helps with that.
Sure. You know, the records preservation, we want to make sure that nobody can change our critical business information. And by having WORM both at the disk level and the tape level, you know, you have your options. And of course, WORM started on the optical media. So if you want to make sure that nobody can alter your business records, you can utilize all of the storage media from IBM and the DR550 platform for that. And then as we talked about some of the encryption capabilities, we talked a lot about record retention regulations, but there's a lot of privacy rules out there. So the ability to secure and centralize your information in one place and then encrypt it if it needs to be, and then also make sure that nobody can change it or modify it if it is key evidence. Those are big features within the DR550 that apply to financial services and government, and it applies to healthcare and a lot of other industries as well.
And again, the last point that we talked about was the fact that, of course, this is an archive. It may not be your most mission critical data, but it is business vital data. So obviously you've got to back that up. And just again, just to quickly recap the backup capabilities.
Oh, sure. You know, the ability to replicate for disaster recovery or utilize the SSAM features, the ability to back up the data relatively easily and smoothly without having to worry about doing the integration yourself from a backup standpoint makes life much easier for any IT personnel that have to manage an archive.
And of course, it's cost effective too, because you don't actually have to use additional backup software.
Yeah, that's a great point, is that if you don't have to buy the incremental backup software just to protect your archive, you're saving money right off the bat.
Great. Thanks, Brian. I guess this would be a good point to just maybe say a few words, summarize things. Brian, do you have any other further comments that you'd like to make about either archiving or the DR-550?
Heidi, I think it's pretty clear that the external climate, record retention regulations, compliance, and storage costs are all driving the need for archiving. And we highlighted that archiving is different from backup. There's some unique challenges of preserving information, keeping it for long periods of time, cost effectively. And we also talked about how the DR-550 addresses some of those challenges. So organizations in any vertical, financial and government, with some of the comments that we had today, but it doesn't really matter, are going to be subject to saving information. They're going to be subject to these electronic discovery requirements. And we all know that they're storing more information just from a general IT standpoint, and they have to find ways to do this most efficiently. And one of the better options out there is to evaluate a multi-tiered archive, and one that's available in the market today is the DR-550.
Okay, great. Thank you. So this concludes today's podcast. We thank you very much for listening. For more information on any of the information provided in this podcast, or for additional information about the DR-550, we encourage you to check out IBM's website, or certainly you can visit ESG's website. Thank you.